Taking a look now at science and scientific research with Bassam Shakashiri, who comes by every so often. He's a professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the William T. Evue Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. He has received earlier a National Science Board Public Service Award. He's cited as the Dean of Lecture Demonstrators in America and the Encyclopedia Britannica. He might not have even known that. I don't know. But he is, and he's here with us today to talk about science and science research. And certainly, if you want to join in with some questions or comments as we move along today, please feel free to join in. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call. And Bassam, you celebrated a fantastic anniversary here just a couple days ago.
Yes, September 17th is the 50th anniversary of my family's coming to the United States from my native Lebanon. This has been 50 wonderful years, Larry, in the United States. We are so grateful for being in America. Both of my parents are deceased now, but my two younger sisters and their families and I and my family, very, very happy to be here. And I really want to tell you what a privilege it is to be a U.S. citizen. It is something that many people take for granted, but it is really a special privilege to be a U.S. citizen and to live in the most advanced society in the history of humankind. It is not a perfect society, but we have responsibilities that go along with being citizens of the United States, being citizens of this planet, and many of these responsibilities manifest themselves in what we do as individuals and as groups. And I just can't tell you this week. Actually, we're going to be celebrating all year long, Larry. it is really special, and it means a lot to me, and it has affected me a great deal. One thing I did earlier this week on Monday, I looked up in old albums that my mother had put together.
Oh boy!
From the photographs from our departure from the Beirut International Airport on September 15th, 1957, and then traced our flight through Europe and to New York City and then to Boston. We came because my father was on a sabbatical leave to Harvard School of Public Health. My dad was a physician. And we came presumably for 1 year. And Harvard said, stay another year and stay another year. And my dad never went back. He then moved to the National Institutes of Health. And we came to Madison, I should say this, in 1958 mm-hmm. to visit my aunt, who was a graduate student. My dad's sister was a graduate student at UW-Madison. She took us to the Union Terrace. We went swimming in Lake Mendota. In 1958, little did I know that 12 years later, I would be a faculty member here at one of the greatest institutions in the world. And I'm really very, very happy about this. And I would like to ask you and ask people in the listening audience to kind of think back and maybe identify some important events that have happened either in science or in technology or in society in the past 50 years, just to reflect on them a little bit, which is something I've been doing. Because if
lots changed.
A lot has changed, and we need to understand our heritage. We need to learn what has happened so that we take control of our future. The future is really up to us. What we do in our society as a result of advances in science and in technology is really up to us, not to somebody else. And so we must understand our heritage, our cultural heritage, our scientific heritage, so that we really take responsibility for what we do in our immediate environment and what we do nationally, what we do around the globe. It is something that I think maybe callers would call in and say, what do you think, what are some of the most important things that happened in the past 50 years? Let me just mention one.
Give me one.
Space age.
Mm-hmm.
October 4th, 1957, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik. And that caused a lot of I was going to say caused a lot of fear. It did cause a lot of fear in the United States, and the result of that was that it caught our attention. Let me put it that way. Result of that was huge influx of attention and support and funding for science and math education. That was perceived as a military threat. And so the society responded, did something about it. Another thing that has happened is the landing of the astronauts on the moon. That's a great technological advance. It's not a scientific feat. It's a technological feat. We have a lot of advances in science and technology we can think about. People might think about the good ones and maybe the not so good ones.
Well, I don't know if Adam's had time to think about that from Medford, but he's on with a question. Adam, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, well, first, let me say that there's a big welcome from me to Dr. Shakashiri as an American citizen because he did it legally. But what I'm curious about is I understand that one of the researchers there in Madison was fooling around with Ebola in a way that was not sufficiently protected with medical safeguards. And I wonder, what is going on there? Is this connected to the Madison campus somehow?
We have a number of very distinguished and accomplished scientists at UW-Madison engaged in a variety of research activities. And we all follow the safety regulations that are set forth by federal guidelines, by state guidelines, by university guidelines. Sometimes an occurrence happens which calls attention, perhaps undue attention, perhaps due attention. I don't know enough yet about this incident that I read about in the paper this morning. So I would like to be cautious in responding to your question until I learn more about it. It may be that some safety regulation was not followed thoroughly. I do not know of anything that has happened that endangers anyone yet.
No.
So it's not a cause for alarm. It is a cause for concern. I think we are owed explanations by the researchers and by the university and by those who fund this research to explain to us what has happened, as well as explain the nature of the research that's going on. To me, that's a very important thing that we should try to do to understand why this research is taking place. And so does that address your question?
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, please.
I'm sorry?
Could I have a follow-up, please?
Sure, go ahead.
Because this Ebola is so dangerous. You know, in Africa, it kills, I think, 90% of the people who contact it. Is there any way that the good professor could come back on a future program and explain what he's learned about this and what the safeguards have been put in place if we're going to be investigating such a dangerous pathogen?
I'd be happy to do that. And between now and then, as I gather more information about this, I will post it on my website. You know, Larry and others in the listening audience know that after every appearance I make on your program, I post a summary of the conversations and then provide some links and some explanations to new things that I was not able to address, just like this one. And so I promise to do that, too.
Okay. We will. And believe me, when Bassam makes a promise, he keeps it. I can tell you that. Thank you, Adam. Joe in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Well, this is a different type of question, I guess, but I've been wondering this, and maybe this is a better question for the professor's website, but or email. But anyway, I was a student when you had first started out in Madison back in the early 70s, and I didn't have you for class, but one of my roommates did, and really enjoyed you for an introductory chemistry class. But actually, my question is, I'm wondering if you could tell me, I had a couple of really, really good professors in chemistry when I was there, and I'm wondering if you would maybe know of their whereabouts or what's going on with them, because I think it's been a long time since they've left the university.
So, do you know the names?
Yeah. One of them was, for organic chemistry, I had a professor, Alex Koch. And the other I had for quantitative analysis was John Walters.
Okay.
Yes, I know both of them, both colleagues. Alex Koch retired and lives in Golden, Colorado right now. John Walters left the UW-Madison and went to, I want to say not Carleton. No, he went to... What's the other small college right next to Carleton?
We'll come up with a name.
St. Olaf.
St. Olaf.
He went
you
to
St.
Olaf, yes. John Walters went to St. Olaf, and recently he retired from St. Olaf. And, you know, it's Joe, it's very delightful for me that you would call and ask about your former teachers, because this is something that all of us should do. We should really acknowledge and appreciate, express appreciation for, as appropriate, for what former teachers have done. Both of them left the faculty, I'd say, at least 20 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling. And I can tell you, too, that it's always nice to hear when a former student, when I bump into someone, it's always great. And we'll talk some more about that, too, after we take a look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about science and science research today with Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and William T. Evu, Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And, Bassam, it really is nice to hear from former students and sometimes even parents.
Parents of former students as well. And we just heard from Joe, who's a friend of a former student. And I just want to say something about a publication we have. It's called The Badger Chemist. It's an annual publication that we send to all graduates of chemistry from the chemistry department. So if Joe and other people would like to get a copy of The Badger Chemist, all they have to do is send a message, an email message, or drop a note to me at the chemistry department, UW-Madison Chemistry Department, 1101 University Avenue. But via email, they can go to our website and send me a message through the website, which is scifun.org, SCI.org.
SCIFUN.
FUN. SCIFUN, yeah. SCIFUN.org, scifun.org. We'd be happy to add your name to the mailing list. You learn about former professors and other things that are happening in the chemistry department. But, Larry, you know, contact with students is so precious to me, and contacts with parents of students as well. I have to tell you, a week ago or so, my wife and I went to Door County at the invitation of a group called Crossroads at Big Oak. And one of the people that works there is a parent of a student that I had in my class 4 or 5 years ago, and she initiated this invitation, and I gave several lectures there, and I also visited a middle school. It was a very, very good visit. It was enjoyed great hospitality, and it was really wonderful to meet parents of former students as well, and I hope in the process also met parents of future students. In one of my public lectures, a man came up to me, introduced himself. He said, "My son is in your class, and he told me that you're going to be coming up here." And so these connections are very, very important, because they contribute to a sense of community that we have. And I'm very grateful for the people who invited me to go to Sturgeon Bay, and we visited all of Door County. And it was just a lot of fun, but it gave us a new connection to people in our great state, to people in your listening audience, and I hope that this will be followed through with in other ways too.
Well, I tell you what, David in Ironwood, Michigan has been waiting, so let's go to David. We've got quite a few callers. Let's get to David here. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I just want to call in. I always was a scientific person ever since I was little. What gets me, though, is how often the religion and science seems to conflict, and early on I got the idea, well, if there is a God, truth would have to be a part of any all-powerful God. Therefore, science and God should not conflict.
Well, what do you think, Sam?
I agree, and I've said this before. I'll say it again. There are different domains of human interest and human endeavors, and science and religion are not at conflict with each other. They can be made to be conflicting with each other, but they're not. They deal with different domains of human interest and human endeavors. We try as much as possible to communicate what science is, what the values of science are to all segments of society. I do a lot of presentations, and my group also does presentations, not only at schools and shopping malls and so on, but for religious organizations. And as long as we maintain a very important element that I always mention, respect, as long as we maintain respect for fellow human beings, and we can have meaningful conversations and meaningful discussions about issues that relate to religion, that relate to science, that relate to anything. In many cases, this element of respect is missing, and so it becomes a shouting match, or it becomes something that is really not productive. So I am an advocate of exploring the connections between science and religion, and understanding what the limitations are of scientific inquiries and what the limitations are of the findings of what science is capable of doing. I have a great deal of respect for religious beliefs and religious affiliations. I may not agree with specific belief, but I respect the person who has that belief, and I hope that that person or persons would show also mutual respect.
Hmm. Thank you, David, for calling. John in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hello there. Hello, Dr. Shakasheri.
Hello, John.
First off, a comment and a question. The comment is, I just retired from teaching happily chemistry at Badger High School for 17 years in Lake Geneva.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you, and I just want to thank you so much for your efforts in producing that the Journal of Chemical Demonstrations that we use so much in our classes there.
It's a pleasure to hear from you about that, John. It's and we are happy to say that we are also in the process of publishing more volumes along these lines, and maybe you can have a contribution for us.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's a possibility. But I'm hopefully going to keep working with some of my fellows there. Now, my question is, we have some new young teachers there, which I'm real excited to have on board, and I'm wondering what sort of advice you could pass along to them or other chemistry high school teachers listening about just dealing with kids and what you think would be the most effective pathway to help them to get to life and college, too, for that matter.
Well, yeah. I'll make a few comments, John, but don't go off the air, because I'd like you also to reflect on that, having been there very recently. So I think one of the most important things we do is to be competent in the subject matter that we teach. We really need to know more chemistry. We're talking about teaching chemistry now,
yeah.
But it could be anything, any other subject. You need to know more chemistry than what is in the textbook that you're using, that your students are using. So you really have to have a larger understanding and a deeper appreciation of what the science is and what the technical details are. That's essential. The second thing is that you have to be committed to the profession of teaching. So young teachers are excited, they're enthusiastic, they're energetic, and if they're not, they should be. But they should find ways to effectively communicate with their students and to keep in mind that the main reason they are in that classroom is to learn, and in this case, to learn science. And science is something that is not learned overnight. It isn't only learned by memorization. There's a great deal of memorization that should be done in science courses, but it's not only memorization. One thing that very important for young teachers, for all teachers to do, is to convey an attitude about science to the people that they interact with. It isn't just do as I say, but do as I do. So following safety procedures in carrying out experiments, making sure that we acknowledge mistakes that students make sure that we correct these mistakes, but also be positively reinforcing what goes on in the classroom. Help create an environment where learning is valued. You know, my motto is science is fun. It's really learning that's fun. Mm-hmm. Learning is fun.
Yeah.
Fun in the best sense of the word. So those are a couple of ideas, John. What do you think?
Well, I'm very much in agreement with you, and I think that we're basically on the same track, and I think I should just keep on checking in there and pass some of this stuff along, because I'm still interested in it, even though I'm not, you know, directly connected to it anymore.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you very much for calling. And Ty in Wisconsin Rapids, I believe you are next. Hello.
How you doing, lady?
Great, thank you.
Oh, and thank you for this program. I listen to NPR all the time. I'd like to ask your guest when he first started this conversation. He said, "What was the most significant thing that happened in the last 50 years
in terms of science?" Yeah,
right. And my first thought was, "Okay, space travel." Okay,
and
he did bring that up right away, and you know, it brought in all the math and everything else because math is very important in that. I guess my question is, I just heard on the news that I believe it was the Japanese have sent something to the moon, an orbiter.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything more about it.
I'm afraid I haven't heard about that, Ty, but it doesn't mean it has not happened. I think, you know, that I mentioned space exploration as a significant development in the past 50 years, and it will continue to be, I hope it will continue to be a significant development in the next 10, 15, maybe next 50 years as well. It's not the only one, though. So
no.
I always have a hard time. People ask me, you know, what's the best demonstration that you can do? And so I have trouble with best. So I usually say it's the last one I did, you know. So Ty, space exploration is really a manifestation of advancing science and advancing technology, but it is really an expression of the human spirit, because we want to explore. But there are other things that we are exploring on our planet. We need to explore and understand and act responsibly in areas that relate to the environment. We learned a lot in the past 50 years about pollution. We learned a lot about the ozone hole and what causes it. We learned about how we can try to control global warming. There is not universal agreement on that.
No.
So there's a whole slew of developments that have happened in the past 50 years. I only mentioned two or three of them very quickly, but we should be responsible in dealing with them and learning, first learning about them, and then be responsible in dealing with them. Because in the case of the environment, it's really the sovereignty of the planet that is threatened. It is what happens to the planet in the next 50 years, 100 years, based on what we do now with the use of fossil fuels and other things. It's not just fossil fuels. So I would say, Ty, that space exploration is important. Healthcare, advances in healthcare are very important. The issues that relate to the environment, issues that relate to education. You know, what do we do in education now differently than we did 50 years ago? Is it better? Where is accountability in what goes on in education and other things in society? So these are just some ideas, Ty, and perhaps others have comments about this too.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Let's give some others a chance to get on here. Lindy in Lake Bell, Minnesota, I believe is next. So let's go there. Lindy, hi.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. First, I want to say I love this program. I'm a salesman. I've listened to you many, many times going across Wisconsin.
Well, thank you.
I had a science teacher in college, and it's the only reason I got through physics is because he was so very interesting. My daughter is a graduate of UW and now is going into graduate school, and I recognize your name because she said, she had you in a class and how terrific you were.
Well, thank you very kindly.
You bet. I think UW is one of the best deals as a parent, is one of the best things going, and for a price, because I write the check. It's a terrific school.
We thank you for that, too.
Yeah, you bet. But now I have two girls in college, one at your college and one at a very good college in Minnesota. I am surprised. I asked them both, because of the terrific, terrible thing that happened at Virginia Tech, and I asked both my daughters, has anyone ever had a drill about what to do if a crazy comes into the school shooting? And I guess I ask you, have you ever had an attack drill, or however you want to phrase it, with any of your classes?
The direct answer to your question is no, I have not had that. I have thought about it, and I have made plans for myself in case something like that happens. I have not announced them as yet because I don't want to be alarming, unduly alarming anyone. But you raise a very important point about securing the campus in case something terrible happens like that. We have routinely fire drills to make sure that evacuation is done properly. In fact, we had it in the chemistry building yesterday, less than 24 hours ago. But you raise a very important point, Lindy, and I will take it in under advisement and talk to my colleagues about it. We have to do this in a responsible way so we don't unduly alarm people, but we should be aware of it. I know the university, I know the chancellor's office and others on campus have carefully reviewed, along with our police department and other security officers, what can happen and what should happen in situations like that. So that's my response to you. But Lindy, I want to say something else to you about what you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You said that teachers inspire students. They do. But the students do it.
Mm-hmm.
The students do it. So inspiration is very, very important. But it's what the recipient of the inspiration does. And so your kids and other kids are the ones who should receive the credit for the accomplishments that they do.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Lindy. Appreciate it. And Charles in Ingleside, Illinois, we'll go to you next. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. Many of us are very concerned about the cost of medical care and how it's handled. It's a big issue these days. I'm very concerned about cost of medications, a little bit closer to chemistry. But the Department of Commerce tells us that private research accounts for $2.7 billion in 1902. I don't have any more recent figures. But public medical research spent $31.6 billion against $2.7 for private research. Can those figures be possible? All in all, they say that the public is paying for 45.9% of all medical care in this country. Are those figures anywhere near right, particularly the research private $2.7 billion and public $31.6 billion.
Charles, there are very heavy investments that both private and the public sectors make in the development of new medication and new drugs. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I know that they are in the billions of dollars. I don't know what the relative ratio is. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of research and a lot of testing to take a drug that has been developed and put it on the market. So there are economic factors that relate to the cost of the medication that we all have to pay. And this is an issue that is going to be forthcoming in the presidential election of next year, because health care and a high cost of health care and the fact that so many people are not insured, health insurance and so on. This is an important societal problem that we need to deal with. But I don't have a specific answer for you about the two numbers that you asked. But I do know it's a huge investment.
Thank you for calling, Charles. Don and Ladysmith, your turn. Hi, Don.
Good afternoon. Dr. Shakashiri had asked, I guess, at the beginning of the show about what's new in the last 50 years that we're impressed with.
Yes.
Our family has gained personally from stem cell research. And now in Wisconsin, Marshfield Clinic, actually through a Catholic hospital, I think it's important for people to realize that there are more types of stem cell research going on other than the embryonic, which seems to be a real problem ethically. And I just want to let them know that that's one of the most impressive things to our family.
Well, thank you, Don, for sharing that. And I agree with you that, that sometimes the discussion about stem cell research is narrowly focused. I think it has to be put in a broader context as far as what our values are as a society. And by that, I mean we take into account what the results of research can help us with, but also what our religious values and religious beliefs are. And so there are many, many advances that can be helpful to us. It depends what we do with them. Any invention, any new discovery can be fascinating, but it depends what we do with it. As you know, I say this in other settings too. Once you invent the gun, you cannot disinvent it. It's what you do with the gun.
Yeah.
This is why I come back to this word that I've mentioned repeatedly, responsibility. You take personal responsibility. We have societal responsibility for what we do with these inventions and with these discoveries. And we do that and we support these investigations, these research activities, knowing that we're about to make new discoveries. We don't know what the effect is going to be. In the 1940s, when scientists at Harvard University did research using radar on what came up, what they came up with was something called the nuclear magnetic resonance effect, which is now manifest itself in MRI imaging. The word nuclear has been dropped from it because it conjures other feelings. So magnetic resonance, Bloch and Purcell, the two scientists, when they published their papers, I can't ask them, they're dead, but I can't imagine that they imagined that whole human bodies will be put through diagnostic machines that will give us, in a non-invasive way, valuable information. So stem cell research, research on the environment, research for improving automobile manufacturing and automobile efficiency, all of this can be very beneficial to us.
And Bassam, as always, I thank you so much for being with us today. And I'll just go back for a second. Your website, you know, lots of things on that website, and it's www.scifun.org, correct?
Yes, scifun.org. And we'll put a summary of the discussion today and, as I promised earlier, some information about the Ebola situation that I need to learn more about it before I post it there.
And if you are interested in looking at some possible research or little studies you can do with your kids and things like that, you've got that on there? And
we have it. We have a listing experiments you can do at home. We invite you all to do them with your kids, with each other, and to tell us about how you enjoy them. And we're also looking for new ideas. So if people in the listening audience have suggestions, we're happy to hear from you.
www.scifun.org. And again, thanks to Bassam Shakashiri, Bassam Professor of Chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and William T. Evue, Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. Always fun to have him along, and obviously he'll be back, and we'll do this again with him. Just to let you know, tomorrow coming up at 11, hey, tomorrow's Friday, that means another edition of Garden Talk. And we'll be visiting with Sharon Morrissey, UW Extension Consumer Horticulture Agent and Educator. She'll be joining us for Garden Talk. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.